Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we have Chuck Hasse on the show for the first time. We get to know a new angler in this episode. Always a good time there. Chuck has been guiding on Leech Lake for quite a few years. You guys with the Leisure Outdoor Adventure crew over there on Leech Lake. And we get to hear Chuck's personal story and how he came up in the industry. He's also a very passionate tournament angler, and we're going to hear all about that. So we get to learn from a new angler in this episode, and we get a great update on how the fishing is going on Leech Lake as well. So a big Leech Lake episode, but also we just talked general fishing with another great angler. So let's get into it. We've got Chuck Hasse. JT Outdoor Products has created a phenomenal lineup of technique-specific rods built entirely to give any angler the advantage against a tournament field, or more importantly, the target species of the day. For any angler that is looking to take their next fishing experience to another level, consider the confidence you might have with a JT rod in your hands. For more information on all the rod offerings at JT, head to their website. That's jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Also on the website, take the time to look up the impressive pro staff that JT has put together and find out why so many top industry pros, from tournament anglers to fishing guides across the Midwest, swear by the rods built at JT Outdoor Products. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. PK Lures offers a deadly lineup of fish and tackle for walleye anglers. If you like to rig live bait, check out their pre-rig spinner rigs. Everything they have is very unique action profiles and colors. I'm talking about the Dakota Disc or the Wobbler. If you like throwing glide baits, new in 2024, PK came out with the Ridge Glider. It's a shad profile glide bait with an oversized hook, awesome for leaning into big fish. Got a really cool blade accessory on the back for added flash. The action on this thing is so much fun, a must have for anybody that wants to throw glide baits all summer long. Crankbaits, lipless crankbaits, they've got it all. This summer, if you want to set yourself apart and offer the fish something they've never seen before, check out what PK's got at pklure.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code JMO for 20% off all orders and free shipping for any orders over $75 online. Chuck Hasse, man, I appreciate you having the time for this. I'm excited to see where this goes, man. It's probably a long time coming, to be honest with you, the amount of times that, you know, behind the scenes, just, you know, Jason, you and Jason have known each other forever, and we go over to Leech Lake all the time, and whether we film with you or not, you know, you're one of the guys that we either tell stories about or talk to, or, you know, one of Jason's good resources over there. So I feel like this podcast is probably a long time coming, but that being said, it is your first time on. So I guess I'm just kind of curious a little bit about your career and kind of your fishing story and kind of establishing you that way a little bit before we get, you know, too deep into the fishing conversation, which we definitely will. So yeah, man, that being said, where did you get your start in fishing? I mean, even if, you know, it goes back to, you know, being a kid fishing for bullheads in a pond, man, like where did fishing all begin for you?
It's funny you say that, because I grew up in West Central Minnesota, just on the edge of Otter Tail County, the next county over. And actually, my first fishing experiences, you know, a lot of it was fishing out of one of the small little rivers, and even the what we called the state ditch for bullheads. Growing up, we trap minnows out of there. We'd catch bullheads, whatever would swim. We'd try to catch it, but, you know, kind of from there, it all started in that Otter Tail County area. You know, we probably had to drive, you know, 15, 20 minutes to the closest lake. We fished everything around there. I mean, back then it was, you go to the bait shop and you listen to the guys in there, and whatever lake was was hot or whatever depth was hot. That's kind of what you did. So I was fortunate enough to have a dad that basically took me every single time he went fishing. And that was kind of just my childhood was a lot of baseball and fishing, because the reality is, unless you were a farmer, we didn't have a lot of other stuff to do in that neck of the woods. It's pretty desolate country. So fishing and baseball pretty much was my time consumer growing up until I went to college.
At some point in time, fishing had to kind of reach a little bit of a higher level. Like, tell me a little bit about that, when things started to take a turn for you on the fishing front.
Yeah. So, went to college in Crookston, not a ton of lakes in that area. But me and a couple other buddies that played baseball there, we fished whenever we could, whenever we had time while we were in school. So it kind of kept it going through college. After college, I took a job. Actually I lived in Fargo for a year, and quickly realized that wasn't me. every chance I could get on the weekend, I was taking off and driving 3 hours somewhere to fish on the weekend with a couple other buddies that I had. And eventually I took a job in Walker, Minnesota. And this would have been, man, back in 2004, I'd say, and just fell in love with the lake. At that point, the lake was just starting to kind of reemerge from the crash of the late 90s. Not a lot of people were fishing it at that point. And the fishing just slowly got better the first couple years I lived here. And it just kind of spiraled from there. I mean, once word got out that Leech was back, I'd say that would maybe be like 2006, 2007. We started getting the tourism back, and I fished every spare second I could trying to learn this 115,000 acre lake. And most of it was done by dragging a crankbait around behind the boat and just looking, observing, trying to figure out different spots on the lake. At that point, it had been so heavily stocked for years that a lot of the fish had reached the maturity age, and a lot of them were 20 to 23 inches. We caught tons of them. And from there, it went into, I started dabbling and guiding a little bit, just on the side as a side deal. And fast forward probably 3-4 years later, I quit my full-time job and started guiding full-time. I basically took 100% gamble on myself. It may not have been the smartest decision at the time, but eventually career-wise it worked out. So I'm happy where I am today now.
Awesome, man. You know, nobody's ever really explained the timeline of Leech Lake to me like that. You talk about the crash. I mean, I've heard that before, just sort of like, you know, just the whispers of it. But that's sort of like before my time, really, before I ever really paid attention to anything in the fishing industry. What was kind of that story of Leech Lake around that time? Like, what was the generally accepted explanation, you know, with, you know, you talk about the crash and the, you know, coming back and the fishing being good and kind of getting to where it is today. What is kind of that story that I don't know so well?
Right. The general explanation is they blame a lot of it on the cormorants. Leech Lake is, you know, if you actually look at a map, probably 80% of Leech Lake is less than 20 feet of water. So at some point, the cormorants were so bad here that they took a lot of the blame from eating a lot of the forage, a lot of the young walleye fry. You know, you hear stories. I love to sit and listen to some of these older guides around of, you know, when the cormorants would get up and off of Gull Island or Pelican Island, you know, it would basically black out the sun. I mean, there was that many of them. You hear stories of Jeff Woodruff, who just passed away a couple years ago here, dragging a dead cormorant up and down Main Street with a megaphone, blaming the cormorants for everything. Like they had to do something. And eventually they did. They started culling the cormorants. They actually still do it to this day. They manage it. They take photos of their nesting areas, and there's actually one person that I don't know the attention span it takes to do this, but she gets to go through and pick out every single nesting pair of cormorants on two or three different islands and come up with a number, and then they come up with a number off of that on how many they're going to cull throughout the year. And I forget what the number is where they try to maintain it at. It's a certain number of nesting pair that's the end result where they want it. The rest they will cull throughout the year. So like I said, the cormorants take a lot of the blame. I'm sure it had something to do with year classes just not reproducing. Yeah. You know, it might have been a combo of two or three things that just eventually led to the crash, but they eventually started stocking heavy. And when they figured that it was able to sustain a decent population and reproduce on its own, which would have been 2012, they have since stopped the stocking. So they have not stocked since 2012. But without the stocking, we wouldn't be where we are today.
It almost sounds far-fetched if you're not from somewhere where there has ever been a lot of cormorants.
Right.
And like you said, still to this day, man, you go out, it's like those box blinds that are out in the middle of the lake.
Yep.
You know, it's like a deer blind that's out, you know, facing an island out in the middle of the lake. You know, just imagine sitting out there.
If you're in the area when they start shooting, I mean, I've taken cover a couple times because it catches me by surprise still. But yeah, it's they're still doing it to this day.
Yeah, definitely. So an interesting time, you know. And then, yeah, you talk about gambling on yourself. You started doing the guiding deal. And I imagine that was, you know, that was the real gateway into kind of everything. But you've, you know, as we go along in your timeline and get a little bit closer to where you're at nowadays, I mean, you're fishing tournaments, big tournaments. You know, the crew of guys that you roll with is deep, and a lot of guys that I've had on the show already and had great conversations. I mean, you're rolling with some of the fishiest guys from over there. Tell me a little bit about that. Get me kind of up to speed to kind of what your deal is as it is nowadays.
Yeah, the tournament thing just kind of, I mean, at some point you got to see where you stand against everyone else, right? I played baseball in college. I've always been a very competitive person. I started dabbling in tournaments maybe through 2013, 2014. And honestly, I mean, got my butt kicked. But what I learned was tournament fishing is completely different from guiding, from just trying to catch fish. It's strategy. It's a mental game, and how you approach things and patience and the ability to go all day for say five bites. I mean, you hear that all the time. Guys are just going out for the five right bites. Well, that's true in a lot of situations. And those five bites might be an hour and a half, 2 hours in between, or you might get all five bites, you know, at noon, halfway through. So it was just a lot of, you know, fishing a lot of the smaller stuff around here. In 2000, I believe 17 or 18, I was fortunate enough to win my first Leech Lake walleye tournament. And that was a big deal. It still is a big deal. It's one of the bigger tournaments in the walleye tournaments in the state of Minnesota. And to do it on your home water, I mean, it really helped, not only with confidence, but my career, as far as guide trips and things of that nature. And really from there, things kind of just spiraled. It's no different. I just got done coaching a baseball game here, and we had a 14-year-old pitcher playing with the 16 and 17-year-olds. And, he pitched a really good game, and you could tell at the end he had a little bit more swagger, a little bit more confidence, and I know he'll take that into the next game and the game after that, and it kind of just builds on top of each other, and then you start learning. And then I reconnected with a buddy of mine who I went to Crookston with, Randy Topper, and he served a couple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. He left our senior year of college, and I finished and graduated, and kept touch with him the best I could when he was gone. Wasn't a lot of talking, but when we did, we talked a lot, and he came back and he started fishing some of the AIM tournaments, and his partner couldn't make a couple events one year, and he asked if I'd fish with him, and really that's where the rest of it, the story starts. We've got a great team. I think you've had guys like Joe Brickle from JT Outdoor Products, Dylan Mackey, Nate Leiniger, Tyler Wolden. We've fished together as a team now for 6 or 7 years. And we've competed, just about every tournament that we've fished in the last 5 years. We've competed at the highest level. And
no, I think that seeing you guys get together, you kind of built up, like you kind of recreated, to some, kind of in its own way, like a locker room, the locker room mm-hmm. effect, right? Like you got that camaraderie going. And gosh, tell me a little bit about the tournament so far this year, because I pay attention enough to know that you've been in some, but you'll have to kind of break some of them down for me, man. What have been kind of some of the more memorable ones lately?
Yeah, it's at least for Randy and I, we've been right there. We haven't been able to completely seal the deal yet this year, and we've been good at that in the past. Take for example, Sakakawea, the AIM Championship. We were in first place after day one, and a lot of things changed during the course of that week. We were with AIM rules on the championship. You're only allowed to fish Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and the tournament starts on Friday. So we had 4 days. None of us had been on that body of water before. So we basically got 4 days to figure it out. No intel from anyone. You're supposed to plug your ears if you're in a bait shop and someone's talking about fish they caught. It's kind of a different deal, but that's the rules. So we're starting from complete scratch. We had a solid program going the first day or two in practice. The wind does what the wind does in North Dakota and blew 100 miles an hour Wednesday and most of the day Thursday. And we realized quickly on Friday of day one, maybe 45 minutes into our first day there, that things had really changed. And the water temp had dropped considerably. The fish we had in practice, just they weren't there. We weren't seeing the right fish. So we called an audible and fished maybe our second or third spot and ended up getting a couple good fish right away. And we were sitting at 40 pounds after day one, which we had a slim lead. And then our decision was, what do we do day two? Well, our decision was we pretty much have to marry that spot now and try to get it for all it's worth. The problem was, I think we hit it a little too hard on day one. We ended up moving back to our original spot, which was basically a shoreline stretch of 3 to 4 miles that held fish. And we quickly knew that those fish had turned back on. We ended up upgrading probably half our bag on day two in the last half an hour we had to fish. We knew it was close to an hour drive back to weigh in. And we simply ran out of time. And the guys who hung on to that spot and toughed it out the first day, and kept her close, ended up catching them day two and passing us. So Little bit of a bummer having it right there in your hands, you know, and letting it slip away. But that's what happens. It's all about decision making. Fished another handful of AIM events, you know, a couple top tens, been in there, just haven't had the right absolute solid winning program, you know, in practice. We've maybe even exceeded, you know, our practice in a couple tournaments. The first one of the year down in Red Wing, which Joe Bricco and Dylan Mackey actually, they got the win down there. There wasn't really any solid program. It was a lot of pre-spawn, you know, fishing current seams and hope you get the right five bites. And I kind of chose to sit in the same spot all day, and I got three of the right bites in about a 15-minute window and no other bites the rest of the day. So that one didn't go so well. But we've got an AIM coming up here on Leech now this weekend on Sunday. We'll see where that goes. The bite's been a little bit tough out here lately. We're hoping to have a successful showing out here.
JT Outdoor Products has created a phenomenal lineup of technique-specific rods built entirely to give any angler the advantage against a tournament field, or more importantly, the target species of the day. For any angler that is looking to take their next fishing experience to another level, consider the confidence you might have with a JT rod in your hands. For more information on all the rod offerings at JT, head to their website. That's jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Also on the website, take the time to look up the impressive pro staff that JT has put together and find out why so many top industry pros, from tournament anglers to fishing guides across the Midwest, swear by the rods built at JT Outdoor Products. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. PK Lures offers a deadly lineup of fishing tackle for walleye anglers. If you like to rig live bait, check out their pre-rigged spinner rigs. Everything they have is very unique action profiles and colors. I'm talking about the Dakota Disc or the Wobbler. If you like throwing glide baits, new in 2024, PK came out with the Ridge Glider. It's a shad profile glide bait with an oversized hook, awesome for leaning into big fish. Got a really cool blade accessory on the back for added flash. The action on this thing is so much fun. A must-have for anybody that wants to throw glide baits all summer long. Crankbaits, lipless crankbaits, they've got it all. This summer, if you want to set yourself apart and offer the fish something they've never seen before, check out what PK's got at pklure.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code JMO for 20% off all orders and free shipping for any orders over $75 online.
Do you feel like you have a fishing style? I mean, you know, I haven't watched you fish, like, and I think that this is kind of fun, you know, things to talk about with guys that are kind of diverse. Just, you know, you fish a lot of tournaments that take you to bodies of water that are diverse, that, so you're doing a lot of different things all the time.
Right.
But if you were to describe yourself under the, in, you know, favorite lake, favorite time of year, favorite conditions, favorite, you know, presentation, like, what would be the best scenario to describe, like, your favorite fishing style?
My favorite fishing style is whatever it takes to win.
Right on.
I've always been a tiller guy, you know, a lot of boat control, hovering over fish, fishing vertical, being patient, waiting it out, that type of deal. The game of tournament fishing is really changing as people are starting to find out with forward sonar, and it's a lot of power fishing. It's a lot of covering a lot of ground until you're seeing the right fish that you want to hopefully catch. This is my first year running a windshield boat, and I'm still getting a little bit used to it, but you know, days of old, I would have said a jig fisherman. Now it's everything from a champ swimmer to a jig and wrap to a bobber and a leech to a jig and a crawler, you know, whatever the lake is giving you. On Sakakawea, I absolutely murdered fish on a jig and a fluke, which we don't get to do around here too much. And I had the time of my life fishing. I didn't tie anything on, anything other, you know, than a jig and a fluke the first 2 days I was out there, because they would absolutely inhale it. And it didn't really seem to matter what you were throwing at it. It was just a fun way of fishing that I don't really get to do around here. Well, the cold front and all that changed that bite. So we actually adapted. And by the time that tournament started, we were fishing a jig and a minnow, you know? So it's that adaptability. There's lots of days where you're rifling through everything at them until you can figure out what it is they want. And some days they don't want any of it. So, you know, I wouldn't say there's really one technique. It's a lot of casting now. It's a lot of reading your electronics and looking for, you know, the absolute right fish and not wasting fish on time that aren't the right fish. You know, you can waste a lot of time throwing at fish that are not the right size, but your ability to read bigger fish on your electronics now is really quicken the game up. And there's lots of days where you do nothing but troll around with your trolling motor on 10 power at 3 miles an hour until you see absolutely what you want to catch and what you're looking for. And just having the mind frame as of, I'm not throwing anything at it until I see exactly the fish I'm looking for.
Yeah, man, it's all about that experience for you then. It's like, it's not about that one, you know, I feel like I relate to this like personally, because I agree. I think like the best fish catch that I could ever have, or the catches that I could ever have, come after some trial and error, after some struggle, after, you know, putting the pieces right together. When it just happens, like, you know, first cast to the last cast all day, like, yeah, I could, you know, that happens at Canada, maybe when you're on vacation.
Right.
But, and I don't want to make it sound like that doesn't trip the trigger completely, right? But when it's easy, everybody would do it. There's almost like a sweetness to just figuring out whatever it is and
solving
and
the puzzle.
Yeah, when there's a puzzle to be solved, when, you know, when guys like you show up, you know, a lot of people, you know, that's probably what sets you apart a lot. Even you know, and then there's levels inside of that conversation as well when you talk tournament angling. Yep. But it's like when there's a puzzle to be solved, the tougher the puzzle, some people fold up the tougher the puzzle yep. gets, and they are more apt to go home and play cards. And then other people get more and more excited. It's like when the puzzle yeah. is really hard to be solved, your mouth is watering even more. And it's like, you're just like a frothing dog over there. And, you know, like a lab that sees a flock of geese coming your way. It's like, you're just ready to, you know, to solve that puzzle and get it. And then when it goes, you know, however it goes, like you said, however it goes. I'm curious about what some of your process is like. You know, you kind of already mentioned the forward sonar is kind of, you know, changing the game for everybody, but, you know, you're really adopting it. We're kind of mentioning, you know, you roll with a good team of guys. You had a great network. I'm sure you're just learning a lot off each other. But for you personally, like, you know, I mean, Sakakawea, what a great example, you know, going to a new body of water. Or when you're just out on Leech Lake, you know, somewhere close to home that you have a ton of experience with, if you're just being objective and you're going to break it down for the day, what is kind of some of your philosophy or just your big picture approach? You know, you talk about, you know, you get on the water and trolling motor's on 10 and you're waving that wand around looking for what you want. I mean, do you still, you know, I imagine you still spend some time side imaging, you know, like, but I'm just kind of curious, you know, sort of generalizing how you break down water when you're putting the puzzle together.
And to be completely honest, it's 90% of it is eliminating dead water. So you show up to a body of water that you've never fished before, and you can look at all the maps and you can go, okay, that looks fishy, that looks fishy, this looks fishy. And you just start picking out pieces, right? And then you break it down small to big picture. And more often than not, you spend 90% of your day driving around and looking at water that's completely dead. And then maybe that other 10% is spent fishing what you think is the right fish. And then from there, it's putting the pattern together. You catch a couple of the right fish. You come in at the end of the day, and that's where you have your team and network. And more often than not, you start putting little pieces together. Okay, they're off the tips of every point on a west shoreline, or they're on the bottom, the secondary break, just off of certain mid-lake structures. So you start eliminating, you know, the big part of the water, and you start looking for smaller pieces that, you know, came into play from what was successful. And some days you have, you know, depending on how much practice time you have, it might be one day, it might be 5 days, it might be a week. And it's just, it's putting that puzzle together. And when you finally figure it out, I mean, there's not much more of a rewarding feeling as a fisherman that, you know, that day you figured the fish out, because more often than not, they're going to figure you out, or, you know, it's not going to be that easy. So it's the game we play. That's what I live for. You know, it's the competitive nature. Solving that puzzle is, you know, a lot of times when I lay down at night, that's what I'm thinking about.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, why won't these fish eat? Why did this fish eat this bait? You know, that type of thing.
You've established yourself as a guide. You've been doing it long enough that, you know, you're a fishing guide, mm-hmm. but your tournament success is also a resume that is speaking for itself. How do you balance that? Like, how do you go back and forth from one to the other? And I mean, here we are now. Like I think that is so interesting, because there's a lot of guys, but I've talked to a handful of guys, some of the guys that are probably as good as anybody doing it these days, you know, where, and it's different for everybody, but guiding on a daily basis, like that's your career. If you're guiding for a job, like that's your full-time job, you really take it seriously. There's a lot that goes into it. Being good at tournament fishing is not the same thing. How do you balance that for yourself? And I'm even more specifically, how do you balance that? Like, how do you balance that mental gymnastics, like on your home body of water, like Leech Lake? You've been guiding for the last couple of weeks, probably. You got this tournament in mind that's coming up, and then you got to switch gears and do that. Like, maybe it's easier for you now, but I can only imagine you've learned got some funny stories or learned some fun lessons through that process.
Yeah, it's in all honesty, I guide 7 days a week on Leech Lake for the most part, from, you know, fishing opener until probably Halloween. Yeah, excuse me. I look at my time when I'm fishing a tournament, I'll schedule X amount of time off. That's my fun time. That's my vacation for 2, 3, 4, 5 days. However many it is, the mindset of putting meat in the live well, you almost have to transform yourself like that. That's gone. Now I'm looking for specific fish in specific areas. It might mean, you know, fishing stuff that I haven't fished all year. But the fact that I get to go do it in a boat by myself, not that I don't love guiding, but, you know, I'm used to fishing with 2 to 4 people every single day in my boat. And when I get to go out and break down a body of water in the boat by myself, it's almost a relaxing thing. So that's really, it's transforming the mindset. And then just being relaxed. I mean, you can put all the pressure in the world on yourself to perform. But the reality is I fish every day. So I know what I'm looking for on the screen. I'm I'm okay with not catching a single fish in a day or two, as long as I learn something. And every single tournament I fish, like, there's one thing I try to take out of it where I learn something from Big Stone Lake that I think I can take to Leech Lake. I learn something from Sakakawea that I can take to Leech Lake. You know, so it's that drive to kind of keep going and keep learning, because once you think you have it all figured out, it's, you realize you really don't know anything, because it can change that fast.
I can only imagine, maybe you got like a story or two, you know, fishing. You talk about, you know, your first Leech Lake win. You know, that was impactful for you. What was the story on that one?
Yeah, that one. And the reality is, out here, you can be a hero and you can be a zero. You can limit out every single day in a row, you know, leading up to the tournament on guide trips, and everyone loves you and everything. And you can go out on Friday, Saturday, and it can be a complete different story. I mean, I can tell you more stories of where I went out and was the zero than I can where I was the, sure, the hero at the end of a tournament. I mean, it can do that to you. And that's the risk you're willing to take. And I mean, it wasn't just too long ago where Randy and I mean, we had maybe 12 pounds on an AIM tournament out here, and we get back to my yard and the wives are like, you know, they want to know how you did, and you tell them and they're like, no, really, like, what did you have? And we tell them again, and then they're like, well, what happened? You know, then you got to explain the what happened and all that. So it's a lot of, you know, you can get your teeth kicked in really fast. But you know, going back to the first Leech Lake tournament win, it was as simple as, honestly, at that point, jigging wraps were kind of first just coming into play, and everyone was kind of getting to know them a little better. And we actually won the whole thing on a spot that I guide on. And we had beat it up quite bad previously, but we fished them a different way. You know, and we triggered a few reaction bites of bigger fish, and it ended up working out.
I mean, that's an interesting story, because, again, just sort of contrasting what it's like to go out and, you know, the difference between going out and trying to break down the most popular pattern where the most fish are, which is usually a smaller class of fish than, say, a tournament grade fish. But Leech Lake is one of those bodies of water. I'm sure it's, to some extent, on any big body of water, but Leech Lake is one of those bodies of water where, you know, like you just said, you can win a tournament, you know, on, you know, maybe a community spot or a guide spot, but, you know, like what you just said, that's a mouthful where you had to change how you fished. You had to change how you fished it to get those right bites versus, you know, I think it, you know, I probably am biased there. I probably spend too much time digging into people's, you know, strategy, where a lot of times if you find a community spot or find a spot full of, you know, smaller fish, you gotta change everything. You gotta go to a different part of the lake to find the big fish.
Right.
Well, that's right. Interesting about Leech Lake. I feel like, and like I said, that it's not exclusive to Leech Lake, right? But that kind of speaks to, you know, Leech Lake is just one of those fish factories that, you know, you can kind of dial in your own thing. Not everybody has to win a tournament. It's not, you know, the top 10 boats in the same spot doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so big. I mean, I've won tournaments out here where I've burned 50 gallons of gas to do it, and other ones I've burned 5 gallons of gas. So it's one of those things where when you're out here every day, you can spin your wheels real fast. I mean, your plan A and B doesn't work out, and you start thinking of all these spots where I've caught fish, or there's big fish, or, you know, you think about all the memories and everything. And it's, a lot of it is just staying, you know, we basically set a plan the night before, and we know once you deviate from that plan, you're probably done for. I mean, I'm not saying it won't ever work out, but once you deviate from that and you start, you know, running around and fishing more spots than you are actually fishing, more often than not, that doesn't work out in your favor. But yeah, it's so diverse and it depends on the year. I mean, I could honestly almost delete all my waypoints every year, at the end of the year and start over the next year, because it seems like Leech Lake always throws you a curveball. What's good and solid and, you know, is most of a lockdown, you know, dead set, done deal is going to be completely different the next year. We're fighting the zebra mussels as all the bigger lakes are around in this area. It's super clear this year, so the fish are even more, a little spookier than normal. We've got a lot of rusty crayfish in the lake that are, they've basically decimated most of the vegetation in the lake now, except in a couple bays. So it's changing constantly. And you just have to adapt. I mean, I'm fishing, like I said before, Leech Lake is pretty shallow, so it can be tough to fish on bright, calm, sunny days, especially when the water is clear. I'm fishing more 12 to 20 feet on guide trips than I ever have in any of the years past, but that's what the fish are doing now, so you have to learn to adapt to it. And there's a lot of times where you come home at the end of the day and you say, I can't believe there's fish in that spot, or we caught fish in that spot. They've never been there before, but that's the whole game there is adaptability.
Is it entirely that you feel like the fish themselves are moving deeper, just kind of reacting to the lack of vegetation in shallow water, the clear water, or are those just the fish that you can actually get to bite, so you got to go out there to find fish that'll bite? You know, tell me a little bit about how your guide trips have gone this year on Leech.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, there's fish all over this lake. I mean, the bite's a little bit tough right now, but anyone who has forward sonar can see the amount of fish that are in the lake. Like I said before, a lot of times we're fishing shallower, especially when we're guiding. Those fish are just a little more spooky. Today we had 82 degrees and zero wind and bright sun. So you can try all you want at those fish in 10 to 12 feet. They're probably not going to bite in reality. So there may be less fish in 15 to 20 feet, but those are the ones that you can get the boat a little bit closer to. You can get away with a little more air, I guess you would say, when guiding. So it's one of those things where you kind of take it day by day, but we are seeing ourselves maybe fishing a little bit deeper, and that's not necessarily because the fish are moving deeper. There's still plenty of fish in 7 to 12 feet of water. It's tougher to catch them. It's tougher to get the boat close enough to them. Really, I haven't used 2D sonar in 3 years out here. Just because I know if I put the boat over top of a fish on Leech Lake, even if it's in 20 feet, they're probably not going to bite. They're already aware that you're present, you're there. Once they know that, they're kind of in a defense mode, and you're probably not going to get them to cooperate. So
for anybody that's, you know, just planning a trip to Leech Lake, you know, or maybe, you know, people that just don't have 15 years, you know, 10 years or even 5 years of experience out there. And I'm not even talking guide experience or local, you know, out there every weekend experience, like, you know, people that just plan that one weekend a year family trip to Leech Lake. I mean, you know, that's a steep learning curve to figure out what's going on.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, like just with that person in mind, you know, some of your, you know, first and foremost, if, you know, hire a guide if you can, probably you're going to, at least for a day or two, you're just going to kind of learn some of those ropes. But, you know, but for those guys that are the DIYers, you know, that are bringing their family up there and they want to do some fishing. I think those are huge tips, you know. And you know, like presentation wise, you know, is it does it get real finessey on those calm days, those calm high sun days? You know, or do you find yourself manipulating your presentation in any kind of way to try to capture a couple of more bites, or what's kind of your process there when the conditions aren't perfect? You know, whether you're guiding or just, you know, maybe giving some advice to somebody that's planning their next trip up there, they just want to put their family on some fish. What's kind of like, you know, the tips and tricks of your presentation breakdown when the conditions aren't perfect? Because I feel like if we spend our time talking about the best days, well, people don't need nearly as much advice on that, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, my motto out here is always to be everything is the smallest you can get away with. Smallest diameter line, smallest jig head size. We use a lot of smaller baits. Everyone, there's a common misconception out there that everyone thinks you need to have jumbo leeches and large leeches and all that. The reality is most of my guide trips are done with small to medium sized leeches. We downsize everything out here. Things such as, you know, waves slapping the side of your boat. It's not fun, but that's a casualty of, you know, AIS and zebra mussels and the water clarity, especially in the shallower water. So it's a lot of little things that go into play there that it might not make a difference, but it also might make a difference if you follow me. I mean, it's day to day. It might be something as small as you know, going to a plain hook on your bobber setup versus a jig head. You know, switching from 8-pound test to 6-pound test, or even I've guided with 4-pound test before, things of that nature. So it's as we go back to before, just adaptability. You know, to fishermen who are coming up here and spending a week, you know, it's early mornings, you know, evenings. It's going to be tougher in the middle of the day, especially when you don't have any wind or bright sun. But those micro adjustments can sometimes make all the difference.
Well, we've covered a whole bunch in this. You know, this is, I feel like we could go for a long time, Chuck. We'll definitely do this again. But I really appreciate it, man. I, you know, learning about you and your history, it's fun. It's unique. It's just really cool. You know, I think guys that, you talk about that point in time in your life where you bet on yourself and you quit a full-time job, not easy to do, you know, to bet on yourself and go guiding and, you know, kind of fulfill a dream, do something that you love every day and just see how that goes. And I feel like you've definitely made a go of it. And I appreciate that about you and your tournament stories. You know, I just think it's great. Yeah. I think that I love promoting, you know, tournament fishing or derby fishing. I don't do nearly enough of it, but so much learning going on. And you just talking about that being a time in your life where you just learned a ton and leveled up. You know, and then you meet people and you build, you know, professional relationships with these guys. And now you're just in the prime of your career, just, you know, running with a bunch of dogs and you guys are just killing it. And I love it. I love paying attention to that stuff and hearing those stories and great Leech Lake talk. I think that's going to go a long ways. I think it's that time of year, it's summer, you know, all the nice resorts around that lake are booked up. Everybody's going up there. I think a lot of people are going to want to hear some of this stuff, you know, when they're planning their next trip up to Leech Lake. So I appreciate it all, man. And yeah, good luck in the tournament this weekend, man. I appreciate it all, dude. Unless something else is gnawing at you, you know, throw it out there. Otherwise, you know, timing wise, man, this has blown by. I would just say we could wrap it up. Maybe if anybody ever had some questions or wants to inquire about a guide trip or something like that, where can people find you, man? What do you want to promote? Promote what you want.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so I guide with Leisure Outdoor Adventures. So you can find them at leisureoutdooradventures.com. You can always call me on my cell phone, send me a text. I'm pretty much an open book. So feel free to do that. My cell phone is 218-289-1383. And I'm always willing to help and do whatever I can. So we're going to give it heck this weekend here and see if we can, we're due for a good finish. So that's our goal for the weekend.
Right on, man. Well, good luck, dude, man. I really, really appreciate it.